think let's dive in, and welcome to everybody who's come to be on the call today. I appreciate you joining us, and I'm very happy to have my good friend Yos Rovers with us. I first met Yos, I don't know how many years ago it was now, Yos, when he came to...
I think it's four or five years.
Yeah, 4 or 5 years ago, and he came to take a manifestation wheel 4-day intensive workshop in the Netherlands. And over the years, we kept coming back together, and then a couple of years ago, really kind of shifted to a whole other level of our working together when he stepped into the Transformational Presence Coaching Program. And now Yos is the host for the training, the coach training in the Netherlands, and we are working together very closely with that. And Yos is doing wonderful work in leadership, coaching, and organizations, transformational work there in the Netherlands, and is really positioning himself in a wonderful way there for doing some fantastic work. So, Yos, I'm very excited to have you here with us today, and perhaps you could just tell us a little bit more about you, about your background in the business world, and the kind of work that you're doing now, just so it'll give us a context for our conversation today.
Yeah, good, Alan. Well, very glad to be here. Thank you very much for the invitation. I happily accepted that. Well, as you mentioned, I made quite a turnaround for about 3 years ago. Before that moment, I have been in. I've been working as a banking professional. I've had several management and direction jobs in different banking organizations, retail banking, private banking. And actually working there all my life. I graduated in my early 20s from business school in Rotterdam in the Netherlands, and well, I've always been in that business environment. Over the years, I found out there was sort of a pattern in my career which actually had two things. One is that I always was there where organization renewal was present, where organizational change was about to happen, and a second point is that I always got very much involved with people and guiding people, with coaching people, with helping people with their, you know, their ambitions or their worries, you know, in private life, in work life. I always had that around, and more something in me grew, like I was getting more interested in the end in how an organization works as such and how people work in organizations, rather than that my interest was in gathering assets under management or doing mortgages and things like that. So one day I said to myself, well, it seems that you have grown out of this type of work, and it's time to do something else that brings you, that brings me closer to the core of my mission and the things I want to do. So I just left the bank for about 3 years ago, and together with Union, we started a company in the Netherlands, working for growth and change, both in organizations and for people. We do training programs, we do coaching, we offer lectures, we publish books on these subjects, and, well, everything based on growth and sustainable change, change from within, growth from within, and acting out of being. That's one of the most important things. So also in our trainings and coachings, we don't do a lot of really action coaching, action training, but we always focus on who are you, what are you doing here, what is your mission, and how can you bring that out into the world. That's what we do. And in the meantime, I also got a position as an assistant professor at the University of Amsterdam, where I am a program manager and a teacher in the postgraduate program of change management. But it's interesting because that's a strictly scientific environment that I work in, and I combine that, on the other hand, in this more intuitive and spiritual environment of the work that I share with Alan. So for me, it's very, very fascinating to live in these two worlds and to see where I can bridge them and combine them. And I love that job very much.
Wonderful, Jos. Thank you so much for being here. And I think you're going to have some wonderful things to share with us about how you see transformational leadership and what you're experiencing there. And I know that people very often come onto these calls curious about how do we bring these transformational kinds of concepts and work into mainstream business world, if you will. So I'm sure we'll get into some conversation around that. I just want to check in. I think some others have joined us. Who else has come on the call?
Hi, Alan. It's Natalie.
Hi, Natalie. Welcome. Glad you are here.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, I thought I heard another beep too, but great. Whoever has joined us, you're so welcome. Just so that we kind of know what we're doing here on the call, Jos and I will have a conversation here around these topics for the next half hour or so, and then we'll open it up to questions and comments and see where the conversation goes from there. If everyone can put your phone on mute, which is star 6, or if you're calling in on Skype, just click on the mute button on Skype, just so we have a nice quiet space for the conversation here, and if you have any background noise, it won't get in the way. So, Jos, thank you again for being here, and thank you for being willing to take the journey that you're taking, you know, because you left a lot of security, you left a very sort of traditional world, and a world where your path, your future was sort of laid out for you in a somewhat probably predictable way, and you took a step to say, no, this isn't who I am, this is, I'm being called to something else, and so thank you for answering that call, and thank you for what you're doing in the world. I'm curious, we've been talking, you and I, a little bit about how leadership is changing, and you know, you've been in the business world at high executive levels for a number of years, and you're looking at leadership in a different way now than maybe how leadership was thought of in organizations and business in the past. So can you speak something about how you see today's leadership compared with former ways of leadership?
Yeah. Yes, I can. So starting, you know, with the former ways of leadership, from which I think it's important not to deny them, you know, or to talk about that with the then, like now we know much more. In the earlier days, it wasn't good enough. I mean, it's been very important to have that sort of leadership as well, because that brought us where we are now. And on the second place, it is also not so that once there was an old leadership and now we have a new leadership. I mean, patterns of leadership, they just evolve. So you might, sometimes there are situations in which it can be very useful and very good to use a leadership tool or an approach that's been there for the last 20 or 30 years, and that's no problem. So we don't have to lose everything we have learned over the last decades in organizations and just say, well, from now on we're going to do it all different because it wasn't good and now it will be much better. So that's the first thing I want to say. Then things that we have changed, of course, are that leadership before was much more about what to do and how to do things. So a leader was a professional who really stood in front of a group and had something like the tour guide we know from our holidays, you know. So they stick up an umbrella and they just say, follow me. I've been here before. I know the way and I shall show you the nicest spots on this journey. So here we go. That's not what it is anymore. Leaders are much more there to serve the group they lead and to be much more aware of the individual needs of the members of that group. So only and use employees as a sort of tool as much as they would use their machines or materials they work with. They now change to a world in which employees are much more served on an individual level, and the leader is there eventually to realize the highest potential in that collective group of employees. So that is something that has definitely changed. When in lectures that I give, just to challenge this and to be more, you know, black and white, like this is how it was and this is how it's going to be, I use two kinds of words. So on the one hand, there's transformation leadership, and I compared it with where we come from, which is transactional leadership. And it's interesting to just say some things about these two words. Transactional leadership is really a transaction. So you exchange really something. So the leader would say to his employee something like, listen, if you do this project, or if you reach sales level 50, or if you reach quality level 99.9, I will give you something in return by the end of the month, and that's usually something that has to do with money. And it works. It works good. I mean, companies have grown on that mechanism. The thing is that after this first month, you have to make this deal again for the second month, and then for the third month. So every time there is this exchange, like you do something for me, and I will do something for you. So the activity of people gets started outside of them. Yes, so there is a leader that starts an activity by saying, I want you to do that and that and that. Third, it's also on the level of activity, of what you do. And the last aspect is that we call that motivation. So motivation is very much an external driven way to get people started. That's what we call transactional leadership. And when we go to transformational leadership, that is much more started from within. So there is not really an exchange, like you do something for me, I do something for you. There is something like, you are here because you have an ambition, an urge to do something. And you know what? I just let you do that. I just invite you to live your mission and to do whatever you want to do and what stimulates you. So it's starting from within. And because there is this little flame burning inside people, it's not something that you have to start again every month, because this is something that keeps itself moving. We don't call that motivation, we call that inspiration. You inspire people, you bring spirit into them to really get them doing what they want to do. And it's not, so your coaching and your guidance and your service is not about what other people have to do. It's not about actions. It's very much about what people can be, and it's very much about being. It's about who you are. And that's, I think, the great difference now from what it was.
You know, yes, there's something that's striking me so strongly about what you're saying about the sort of month-to-month thing that you kind of start a new agreement, in a sense, that each month, this is what I need for you to do, and in exchange at the end of the month, I'll give you this much money. Or whether that's month-to-month or project-to-project or whatever. But the words I'm hearing are engagement for services. You know, it's as if it is a very sort of contractual kind of arrangement there that we've completely accepted as what is normal and what is expected, that it's a contractual agreement, a transactional agreement, that the job gets done, I get paid. And there's certainly nothing wrong with that on the surface, and yet, is there an engagement of the human spirit there? And you're kind of showing us the other side of where it's the engagement of the human spirit of making it a truly inspirational process instead of motivational process. That is engaging the human spirit, calling forth a spirit that really wants to engage in a project that's going on here, that really feels like it has something to contribute. And now we are engaging with those that, I like to think of it, those that we serve. When we are leaders, we are serving those who are coming along with us. And so we're engaging them at the human spirit level rather than just at how do we get the job done level.
Uh-huh. That's true.
I just love what you're bringing forward here and how you're drawing that distinction in a really, it's a really interesting way. I hadn't ever thought about it in the way that you've drawn it, of kind of an old paradigm of leadership and this new paradigm that's starting to come into place. And it's I really appreciate that way you've drawn that picture.
There has been, so here's the scientist in me coming to the scene, but there is a European research from several universities together that people who are very much impassioned by their work, very much inspired by their work, that they actually they have better results in you know, so they are sick or ill and not present in their job. They can work under a higher workload without experiencing a more work stress. So that's very interesting, that if you are really inspired and passionate by the work you do, that you will eventually do more work in terms of deliver more output, and at the same time feel less work stress than people that are just, you know, motivated and like their jobs and just do their jobs in a very good way. That was not the point, but that's very interesting research.
You know,
there is this difference when you look at it.
As you talk about that, there are three books that come to mind. The most recent one is by Daniel Pink, his latest book called Drive, which is all about what is it that actually motivates people to do something. And Daniel Pink is speaking a lot these days about incentives and all these incentives that businesses and organizations create in order to hopefully make their employees do more or to get higher results. And his point is that the science shows time after time after time that it doesn't really work. That incentives, if anything, may actually drop the productivity. And because instead, as human beings, we really end up producing the most because we care about it, because we have a passion for it, because it connects to something inside of us, it feeds our souls, it feeds our spirits. That's what we're really producing, and it's just really affirming that this research that you're talking about. It's just more results coming from different places. He quotes a number of studies and has a lot of results as well, so I can recommend that book, Drive, by Daniel Pink. And there are a couple of others. One is a book that I recommend to all my leadership clients called from the business world called Firms of Endearment by Raj Shishodia. Firms of Endearment, it's profiling 33 companies around the world who are doing business a different way and really operating much more from this place that you're talking about, Yos. And in fact, he even says if a company does not know it's sold, then that company is really not going to thrive. It may survive, but it is not going to thrive. So that the company's soul is represented and then how it connects to the individual souls. So that book is Firms of Endearment. And then the third one that comes to mind is Patricia Aberdeen's book called Megatrends 2010. There's a huge amount of research in that book about a move towards conscious capitalism, a move towards a different level of consciousness in business and organizations. So those who are listening, those are some, if you don't know those three books, those are some resources that may be helpful in exactly what Yos is talking about here. And I found them, especially Patricia's book and the Farmers of Endearment book, I found them very helpful in finding language to be able to talk about some of these concepts in a more mainstream environment. So, you know, Yos, I want to go to something else that you talked about. You kind of alluded to a little bit, and when you and I were talking about this call, you used this term. You said we talk a lot about leadership, but we don't talk about followership. And I love that word, followership, and it made me think about, there's a wonderful quote from Gandhi, when Gandhi said, "There go the people. I must follow them. I am their leader." And so... I'd love it if you could talk a little bit about this whole aspect of followership within the new paradigm of leadership.
Yeah. It's, you know, Alan, it's very nice to get this feedback from you, how you like this this word, because I got used to it. I only discovered the word actually about 3 years ago when I started working at the university where they used it. And now when I use it in my professional work, many people respond like, "Oh, well, sure." Yeah. Because what I always said, you can't have leaders if you don't have followers. So the only reason that leaders can exist is because... So, I mean, there are bookshelves full with books about leadership, and there are hardly any books about followership. Well, that's, you know, it's really so much close to it. You can be a leader if you don't have followers. And
well, I think there's another place I think to go with that, though, that you kind of perhaps suggest, and that is that what if being a follower is a part of being a leader, that the leader herself, there's an aspect of followership to leadership. And what is that? How are they one and the same?
Yeah, that's great. I was talking to a woman this afternoon, and it was about a training that I was following instead of giving. So I was, you know, the student, and I told her an example of how I made an intervention, at which I also was a sort of a teacher in that program. And then she said, "That's very interesting, because every teacher realized that they are also the student in that same class, and every student may realize that they are also a teacher in every class situation." And that's very much, you know, with what you say now, that, a leader is at the same time a follower, because he also follows energy, follows ideas, follows markets, follows visions. So, yes, he's not only always leading and running ahead of the troops and by not looking over his shoulder and by just believing that he's the only one to make progress. So, yes, that's true. And in that perspective, followers are leaders, too, because they lead their own work, their own station, their own desk as well, and that they have their responsibilities there. So, yeah, thank you for bringing that up. That's interesting. There's definitely a combination about these two. Sure.
You know, I think about leadership is that there are three levels of leadership. That the first is following a leader, and that being actually an aspect of leadership. When we talk about everything, we talk about life as energy in motion, then the leader that you choose to follow, you are adding energy to that work. You are contributing energy to whatever that leader is doing. So in a sense, that is also an act of leadership, because you're making a choice about what to feed in the consciousness, what to give energy to in the consciousness. And then that second level is leadership for yourself, and then the third level, if you choose to lead others. If we come back to this Gandhi quote and think about it in terms of the followership, when Gandhi said, "There go the people, I must follow them, I am their leader," this wonderful way in transformational leadership and transformational presence work is so much about listening to the energy and following that as the leader. leader, it's following the potential, following the energy. And I'm curious as to how in your work, because obviously you do the transformational presence work, you coach people in that way, what are you discovering about how leading is really about following what wants to happen?
Well, it is very concrete to be seen in modern teams. What I see there is that there are no longer teams that have an office, you know, second floor behind the elevator, and you open the door and there they are, all 15, something like it. Because they are working in part-time, they are working 24/7, they have, you know, holidays there and there. There are autonomous groups much more than before. So, and that also brings me to a point that a team, a group of people, is a much more complex entity than it was a couple of decades ago when a team was just a group of people that would hardly change, that had a specific job that was very controllable, etc., etc. There is a much more complex context now. And if you want to be in control of that complex context, the interesting thing is the only way to get in control is to loosen your control in a traditional way and to appeal for autonomous people, for responsibility, for trust, for what would you say, for recognizing people's skills, people's talents, people's responsibility. So there is a completely different way of control coming up in leadership there, and it is very much a way of leadership in which the leader follows the energy of individuals, and energy is then translated in follows their ambition, follows their time schedules, follows their work-life balance, follows their ideas, etc., etc. And to manage that complexity means that you, well, you know, I think you can't manage that complexity in a traditional way. So the only way to really manage it and to still inspire people is to let go many of the controls, to let go many of the approaches you used to choose, and just follow the energy and follow trust and follow the beating and the wonderful presence of people in a team.
So as you talk about following the energy and following the people in the team and so forth, and it's the word that you're not saying, but it seems so present here, is intuition. That and I don't want to say that this is actually new to use your intuition in leadership, because certainly I think our strongest leaders throughout human history have operated very much from the intuitive mind. We kind of got away from that a little bit as we got into such a numbers-based approach and results-based approach to business. So if we just come back to then this idea of intuition and working from the intuitive mind, understanding that the rational mind is just one small part of that much larger intuitive mind, things are shifting. It seems to be shifting in terms of kind of intuition coming out of the closet, in a sense, and stepping forward in business, being able to more openly talk about intuition and the using it. In fact, you know, and I can't use this figure for too much longer because it's getting out of date already, but in Fast Company magazine, which is a very progressive business magazine here in the U.S., in the December 2005 issue, they listed 100 trends that would change the way that we work and do business going forward. And the number one trend was acting on intuition. So mm-hmm. When you talk about following the energy and I'm hearing you really talk about using intuition and use letting your intuitive senses guide you, this whole thing that you're saying about letting go of control. And in order to have more control, we actually have to let go of control in the more traditional sense. So can you speak about how intuition shows up for you and how you work in a business sense?
Yeah. Maybe just by giving an example first of how in when I was still at the bank, how things started to become complex also for me, you know, being a manager that uses his intuition a lot and whenever possible. And that is that a bank is a very traditional organization, of course, and controls in the bank, they go very, very far. So you really have to fill in many forms. There are reports and things like it. And I, as manager, would have, you know, when something came up, someone would come up with an idea or with a project, and my intuition said something like, well, that's good, just let him do that. I often had to arrange a report with a plan of approach and budgets and things like that. That would sort of kill the idea because my intuition wasn't good enough. That's one thing that got me trouble on some parts. And the opposite was also true. There were also things that were very, very much in control because the reports showed a great control, because the figures were right, because the words people choose to write about their project were right, but there was an intuition like, it doesn't really work. There is something around this that will, you know, it will be turned around, this project, because I really don't have the intuition that this is the right thing that they are doing. And sure, by the end of the day, you know, things happen the way your intuition feels about it, but to be very honest, it isn't always easy to bring that into a world. For me, that was in a world with bankers that doesn't always work that way, that are not people that aren't programmed that way, that are not convinced that way. There are different truths around the world, and that's something we have to deal with. So that's the first thing. And second, I did this great workshop with Alan. This is not a promotion, but called Intuitive Living. And in 2-3 days, Alan was a great appeal on our intuition and on our intuitive skills. We developed them rapidly then. And by the end of this workshop, we are just giving one another readings. We read people, we tell them what comes in, what shows up, and people can work with that. And I'm very grateful to have had that experience, and I often bring that back in my work, like trying to read something in people and just give them back what I read, give them back what my emotions are about specific things, like so you say you're angry, but is there also frustration? Because that's what I feel about it. People might say, oh, glad was the result. But what would you have liked more in this project? Because I read that there are more things behind that. And I do that intuitively. I do that out of the tools that I have learned in my life in doing this specific transformation work, in doing this energy work. And you don't have to tell them all the time, like, now I will give you something back on an energetic level, or now I will give you something back that my intuition has just told me. People don't have to know that. If you just do your job with respect and in a strong alignment with yourself, and really wanting to serve the other person, you can just do that. Trust the process you're in, trust your intuition, and respectfully give back to people what you see. And that helps a lot.
Wonderful. It's so interesting. There's many things that you're talking about, Yos, and about some of the challenges in the business world as well as how how we can start to move forward towards new paradigms here. I'd love to open up the call here to questions, comments from those of you who are listening. Just press star 6 to take your phone off of mute, or click on that mute button on if you're on Skype. And anyone who has a question for Yos or for me, or a comment about what's being said, other thoughts or ideas? We've talked a little bit.
Mary?
Yes, yes. Go ahead, Mary.
I was just wondering about in working with people who come from a more transactional model of leadership, the dealing with sometimes a sense of vulnerability around making a shift in style, and if there are any ideas around ways that can be addressed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, Mary, thank you for that question. That's a very interesting one. What I have done several times in my practice, and what works, is that I start with these leaders themselves, because they also receive a form of leadership from levels above them. So I just make them aware of how they would like to be led and what they think is important in the way they are receiving leadership. And I just let them with that. I just leave them with that, let them think about it, let them feel about it, let them explore about it, and only then translate that to their own leadership, to their followers. So that's a way of opening it up.
That's great. Thank you.
I love what you're saying about that, Yos. You know, one of the things that I always do when I'm working with a team is the first thing we do is create some commitments together. We always do this in the trainings. And if I lead a workshop that's more than just a few hours, we make some commitments to one another. And one of the questions when I'm working with a team or an organization is certainly, so how do you want to be with one another? And Or to ask that question of when it gets really hard, when we come into conflict with one another or a disagreement about something, how do you want to handle that together? And so by setting up these agreements from the beginning, at which you sometimes have to come back and remind them of those agreements if it gets hot and tensions rise, but having made those agreements, it takes everyone to a different level of awareness of how they were operating, how they were being together. And they're always so surprised when I'm leading them in this training or in this coaching work that we're doing together, I'm asking them for all these commitments that they to make to one another. And then in the end, the last commitment I ask them for, or the last thing I ask them is, and what commitments would you like to ask me for? And that's always, there always seems to be so much surprise with that, as if, well, nobody's ever asked us that. What do we want from you? To me, that's a really important part of a transformational leadership paradigm, is that the leader is entering into relationship with those with whom they are working. And this, again, as I say, I always think of it as those who we are serving as leaders. Entering in relationship to say, this is a two-way street. You know, I'm going to ask for some commitments from you, but you need to be free to ask for commitments from me. Who do you need for me to be as the one who's leading you down this road? What do you need from me in terms of being able to trust, and in terms of being able to know that we really are going to walk down the right path together, or whatever that is? So opening up these commitments, opening up communication, you know, this is, I think that word communication is incredibly important in transformational leadership, and something that is missing on so many levels in places that are not functioning so well. Because when there is not communication that goes back and forth and all around in between all the levels and all the people, if people are not free to be able to communicate authentically and openly, then we have a problem. So that's another part of this paradigm of transformational leadership that we're stepping into, and that's that leadership followership thing that you talked about wonderfully, and this intuitive piece also of being able to just sense, you know, we're talking and talking and talking here, but nobody's talking about what the real issue is, and it's time to bring that out. And to follow that, to have the courage, to have the trust, and to have the safety, that the conditions have been created for the safety within the room, within the team, within the organization, to speak the truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Alan, Paul here.
Yes, Paul.
In just what you talked about, I run into this term, this word, and that's called servant leadership.
Yes.
Something is that a term you are familiar with?
Yes, absolutely. It's a term. His name is flown out of my head right now. He was.
It's Greenleaf, I think.
Greenleaf, yes, but even before that, the guy who started the World Business Academy, and his name has an H in it. It starts with an H. I can't think of his name.
Yeah, right, Robert. Yeah, his first name is Robert, but I don't know either of this point.
Anyway, it's this whole idea of servant leadership is so important because it takes us out of the realm of power, leader as power and control, and into the role of what wants to happen here. It's out of the realm of this is what I want, into the realm of what wants to happen.
Yeah, it's what I came across was like from authoritarian leadership to servant leadership.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that really is the paradigm shift that we're...
It's not about the leader, it's about him, but it's about making the group stronger, make everybody stronger who's a part of, to be a part of.
You know, I think, Paul, that what you're saying, to bring in that title, servant leadership, that is so much what we've been talking about here, of going from leader as I'm in front and everybody else better follow, to leader as follower. That sometimes the leader is at the back of the group, and sometimes the leader is in the middle of the group, and sometimes the leader is in the front of the group, you know?
In a way, that's then to serve the group, or to serve the process, isn't it?
Yes, to serve a bigger picture, I think, you know, something more than the immediate need as well, to recognize that there's something larger at work all the time, and how we tuned into that, serving that, paying attention to that.
Yeah, there was something that was puzzling me a little, because I was looking on the internet for servant leadership, and I also came across some Christian organization that uses that word. And I was maybe afraid that in the United States it has a more of a religious context. Is that true, or isn't it?
No, I would not say that that's true. I would say that it may be used some in that way, but I would not say that it has that context alone in the U.S. at all. I think leadership is a very, very important aspect of the new paradigm of leadership that is emerging.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you.
You know, this book, Firms of Endearment, also really helps us to understand this better, in that they talk about a stakeholder relationship model of an organization, of a business, rather than a shareholder relationship model.
Uh-huh.
A shareholder model, only the shareholders are the only people they care about. But when it's a stakeholder relationship model, every single person has to win.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Anything else from anyone? Well, Jos, if there are some words that you wanted to leave us with about what transformational leadership means to you, and so just some closing words. What would that be?
Yeah. Well, for me, transformational leadership is very much about working from who you are. So it's leadership that invites people to be, that invites people to work from their deepest being, and to discover them, and to let emerge what type of behavior, what type of doing gets along with that being. And that's what it really is for me. And well, I'm glad with the things that have come up, because Paul mentioned servant leadership. I remember that Robert Greenleaf also says it's first you want to serve people, and second you want to lead them, where traditional leadership first wants to lead people and secondly wants to serve people. It also recalled something from Jim Collins, who also said, you know, in traditional leadership, there is always a plan. Yes, there is always a solution in advance, because there is a problem and the leader has a solution. And then we start moving all together towards that single one solution. And Collins says something like, first you get the right people, and then you get the right project. And that's interesting, because organizations always turn it around and say, no, listen, this is our project, and we need the right people for this project. But turning it around, you just say, no. If we have the right people, we will rely on the fact that they will come up with the right project. So that will emerge from the group when we have the right group. And that's very much with transformational leadership. If you have the right people, if you coach them on the right things, on what they deeply are, then, you know, they will do the things that need to be done. That will emerge, and that will unfold from that point on. And that, for me, has a lot to do with transformational leadership.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for that. Thank you. Well, thank you, everybody, for being with us on the call today. And those of you who are listening on the recording, thanks for also joining in. And we will take a little hiatus from these monthly calls now for the summer and resume again in September. So you'll, if you're on the mailing list for the Center for Transformational Presence, you certainly will receive announcements of the next Transformational Leadership Dialogue, which will be in September, and then the next coaching demonstration will be in October. Thank you so much for being with us, and I hope that we will meet again soon. Take care, everyone.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Goodbye.
Thank you
for having been here.
Bye.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Josh. It was really great.
Thank you, Paul.